Or take, for instance, the arts. In what way does the destructive, reactive mind, you know, operate here? Well, we could say it is through the carpings of small-minded critics who can't appreciate true greatness. I remember in this connection quite recently, I was listening to some of the music of Richard Strauss. People have been very kindly giving me CDs of the music of Richard Strauss, to which I've been listening. And one of his compositions is called The Life of a Hero. And in the opening movement, you get the sort of hero theme. And in the second movement, or what appears to be the second movement, you get all sorts of sound, all sorts of odd little sounds, little sort of sharp, quavering sort of sounds, which, according to the program note, represents the critics who were criticizing Richard Strauss, you know, for his music. So you always get, you know, those sort of people. Of course, if you're criticized, it doesn't mean that you're a genius. But a genius may be criticized, which is another matter. Yeah? So in the field of the arts, you get this sort of niggling criticism. Yeah? You get in other fields also, of course. But then I think where the destructive force operates perhaps most is within the life, within the psyche, if you like, the soul of the artist himself. Some artists begin to compromise. They start off very well. They're inspired. Perhaps they are geniuses. But then they start compromising. They want success. And therefore they start supplying the public with what the public wants. In other words, with what will sell. Because perhaps they've got all sorts of domestic responsibilities and commitments, or perhaps they want to build themselves a magnificent house and entertain in style. So they compromise. So this, we could say, is the working of that reactive mind in its destructive aspect within the mind, within the psyche of the artist himself. Sometimes I think that the Pre-Raphaelite painter Millet was an example of that sort of thing. He produced some really wonderful work in his early days, but towards the end of his life, though he did sometimes paint very fine pictures, he seemed to my mind at least, to compromise more and more with his public that wanted just pretty pictures, you know, like Winter's Bubbles. I don't know if you know that one. It's a good example, I think, of that kind of thing. And, of course, writers do that too. Some of you may know that very fine novel by George Gissing called The New Grub Street, which tells the story of a novelist, a literary man, who set out with great ideals but who gradually compromised and was writing the sort of novel that the public wanted to read and which would therefore sell and bring him in a lot of money. The old Grub Street, of course, was the street in which hack writers lived, who sold their pen, you know, to the highest bidder in the days of good old Samuel Johnson. So the new Grub Street illustrates, you know, this sort of thing.